Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is our chance to get together each week and have a look at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. What's new, what's working well, what's accessible, and what could be better. If you want to get in touch with us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be looking ahead to Sight Village Glasgow. Hubert Pavalkovic demonstrates the Plaid Note Pin AI voice recorder. Plus, we'll be catching up with some of your emails and voice messages. Joining me this week are Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Welcome into all three of you. Hubert, let's start with you. What's new?
I have a question for you. So how important is to you which voice you use as your screen reader voice? I imagine it'd be quite important because some of us have to hear it every day. There's a reason I ask, but yeah, how important is picking the right screen reader voice?
Interestingly, I've used the same voice on most of my devices for about the last 10 years. I've used the Serena voice. Other than on Jaws, I don't like Eloquence, but for me, Eloquence is the Jaws voice. Any other voice on Jaws just doesn't sound right to me for some reason.
I'm exactly the same on that.
I'm the same.
For me, what recently happened, I've been using the same voice, the Alex American voice, for the last 10 years, but I've recently noticed a slight issue where I've been having this issue for quite a while and wondered what's causing it. I've been having response time issues when it comes to using VoiceOver in specific areas of the device, for example, on the home screen or in folders where I've got apps or in the music app or when trying to spell something character by character. I thought the response time between the gesture and the actual speech output was, it felt like I had to drag VoiceOver almost to do what it needed to do. I've recently discovered accidentally what the cause is. Or at least what I think the cause is, because I've changed voices recently to a different voice, much smaller in size. And I've noticed the response time in these areas I mentioned has actually improved, which is great. It does mean, though, that I can't use the voice I've been using for 10 years, and I'm really frustrated by that.
It does throw you, doesn't it, using a different voice? Like, it really, it shouldn't do, because it's the same thing. It's the same, you're getting the same content, but it just doesn't sound right.
Well, I think some people thought that, oh, this is great. We're going to be getting Eloquence on the iPhone. You know, we're going to have Eloquence as one of the voices, but it doesn't sound right and I don't like it. So I didn't opt to have Eloquence as my voice on my phone or my iPad. I'm using Siri Voice 2, which I find is quite responsive, and I have it at speed 60, which I guess some people, could have it a lot faster than that. In fact, I know a lot of people do, but I don't like it so fast that it sort of gabbles and I can't understand it. So I like it at a reasonable speed, but I do not like the Eloquence voice on the phone. It just sounds different. It sounds like he's imitating Eloquence. So I didn't bother with it.
I recently been experimenting with different voices on the iPhone just for the fun of it, because kind of like Hubert was saying, is you get a voice you like and you stick with it. And I realised actually, particularly on Apple and VoiceOver, there's loads more choice than there used to be. And I've sort of settled on Siri Voice 2 as well. I've got mine at 75%. But what I find is once you get used to a voice, or the more you get used to it, I will slowly start to increase it. So I think I started off at about 65, 70, and now I'm up at 75, and then I'll slowly move it up higher.
As I said, I pretty much always use the Serena voice wherever I can, although sometimes I do use the Siri Voice 3, which is the kind of northern voice.
I mean, of course you'll be using that voice.
yeah, of course, yeah. That's the one that I use for demos. If you've ever heard me demonstrating something on the iPhone recently, it's probably been that voice. And that's quite nice, just for kind of sitting back and if you're just casually reading something. But what I find with the Siri voices is when you speed them up, they do go a bit, they do lose quite a lot of clarity.
They do, and that's why I can't. My speech rate is always at 100%, and I can't use the Siri voices at that rate, so therefore I cannot use them.
Wow.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah, my voiceover has to be as fast as my guide dog. It's just like, yeah, everything has to be at super speed.
I also think, I don't know if anybody here has thought about this. I like the speed to be faster as well because I think it's more private. Other people are much less likely to hear it and understand it, the faster it is.
Yeah, that's true. I think that is a fair comment.
When I was growing up, because I did the same as you, Natalie. I just got used to the voice and gradually sped it up. But the big mistake I made, so first off, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
I was speeding the voice up, but I was also using screen curtain for the genuine reason of just saving battery. But of course, that all that led to was highly suspicious parents. Right, hang on, your screen's black. That is so fast that we can't understand a word it's saying. What are you doing?
Clearly, you had a much more dodgy childhood, Callum, because my parents never questioned it.
Jackie, anything new with you?
Tech Freedom, which is an Android app, has a new update and therefore some new features, but it's also gone to a subscription model. So the issue with that is that it's very cheap to buy. I think at the moment until the end of May, Tech Freedom are offering, I think it's something like £4 for the year at the moment. So it's not a big deal to buy a subscription, but I think they've joined the bandwagon of developers who will bombard the app with ads if you don't subscribe. It never used to be that way. It was a free app, and I totally understand they've gone to a small subscription model to help cover the costs of development, and that is absolutely fair enough. But it's just that I think you're really paying to get rid of the ads because they are really quite intrusive, and that is the same on lots of apps that they want you to buy a subscription so that you can get rid of them. I think YouTube and all these other apps as well are the same. So, but it is a good app if nobody's tried it, and then give it a go. It's free to download. As I say, the subscription model is only a few quid. And to be honest, there's a lot of features in it. You've got AI in it. You've got sort of a document reader, short text reader, scenery. There is a really good music player in there, which is quite basic, but it's really good. It does the job. You can skip forward and back tracks. You can shuffle. It is quite a nice app, Tech Freedom. So if you have an Android device, give it a go.
And what was the price of that subscription again?
It's just over £4, I think, until the end of May for the year. And then you've got a monthly subscription if you want to. But at the moment, I think they'd like you to take out a yearly one because that's the cheaper of all the options.
That is pretty good, to be fair, as far as
Yeah,
subscriptions.
it is.
I feel like nowadays, because we've got so many subscriptions, when you get to more than, say, like £5 a month, that's when, for
Yeah.
me, it's a bit. I don't know. Not because of the cost, but just because, well, not purely because
But
of the
they add
cost,
up.
but they add up. Yeah, exactly. You've got Netflix, you've got Apple Music, you've got.
They do. If you start subscribing to this one, that one, then you've got a streaming service for music, which is at least sort of 10, £11 or more a month. They do all start to rack up, and you think, well, hang on a minute. I'm going to be spending 20, 30, 40 quid a month on different
Yeah.
subscriptions. No, I'm the same. I just think, no.
I think it really depends with me and subscriptions. I look very carefully at how much I'm using each subscription, and then, do I use it enough to justify paying X amount of money a month for it? For example, my Apple Music, I use it pretty much every day, most of the day, because music plays all the time when I'm doing things. So, I'll say that's easily justifiable. But like my Netflix, I share my Netflix subscription with my family because they like the super high quality. And I said, I'm not paying for that unless you're going to share the subscription. Because otherwise, I would have just paid the cheapest version and be done with it. So it all depends with subscriptions. You need to look at the amount of money that they are asking and think, do I use it often enough to pay? Yes or no? And if it's a no, then it's a goodbye. And if it's a yes, then carry on.
It's all very subjective because then, the argument is, well, what do you call use it enough to subscribe to it? You know, some people might think that a subscription, if they just use it once a month or a couple of times a month, they might think that that's enough. I mean, I know people that subscribe to just about everything there is. I personally, I'm very choosy about what I do. It took me long enough to subscribe to a streaming service because I've got all the music really on my computer, and I thought, well, why do I need to buy it again by paying for a streaming service? But I think it's the convenience of it that I like, and that's why I decided to pay for you know, Apple Music. But I've tried Spotify,
It's
and
exactly the same for me.
yeah, it's convenient.
All right, fair enough. Natalie, anything from you?
Yeah, so I spotted something actually just last night. It's a very small thing, but the iPhone Notes app now has a record audio feature, which has been around since iPhone 12. So apologies if this isn't old news to everybody else. But I think it's new. Is if you start a new note and you go to, there's a button for attachments. If you select that, there's an option in there for record audio, and you can record audio, funnily enough. And then once you're done, if you want to, you can view a transcript of it as well. And then when you're done with that, you hit done and you're still in the notes. So if you wanted to, for example, for us, perhaps like record an interview and then write notes underneath it, you can do that all in the one space. Because I noticed a few weeks ago that Voice Memos has a transcript feature, and the way it looks to me, Notes kicks out to the same setup as in Voice Memos. But like I said, you then have the advantage of when you're closed it, you can write notes underneath it, which I thought was quite a neat feature.
That is quite nice, yeah. I think that is new in iOS 18, but that Notes app, it is more powerful than I think we give it, well, certainly I give it credit for.
Yeah, it's changed significantly, I think, from when it first started, and it literally was a digital pen and paper.
My wife shared one with me the other day, a note that for something that we've got going on, and she'd created a full-on checklist in there. So you had your note there, but then you had different items and you could tick them off, and when you Obviously, it was a shared note through iCloud. So when I tick something off or she ticks something off, we get notified. And I've always done that through the Reminders app, but now you can do it in Notes as well. It's like, oh, wow, didn't know
Yeah,
that.
it is more powerful than it used to be. Because, as you say, it used to be certainly just a, you know, new voice note, or rather a new note that you typed in. So yeah, it has come on a lot, and I would suggest it's probably trying to keep up with likes of Google Keep, because Google Keep you can do all that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like personally to use apps sort of that are native to iOS or already built,
Yes.
because I just think the chances of
Yeah.
bugs or them updating it and breaking it are reduced significantly than if you have a third party app. Because I think we've all been there, sighted or otherwise. So you've had a third party app that's brilliant, and then somebody somewhere along the lines updates it and breaks it, and you just want to kill.
Speaking of things suddenly breaking or suddenly going away, I've been annoyed this week. I'm not going to lie, I've been frustrated. So I still haven't worked out if I'm affected by this or not. I'm hoping not, because I'm hoping I would have been told by now. But Google are ending support in a few months. So in October, they're ending support for some of the older Nest thermostats. So the Nest Gen 1 and the Gen 2 thermostats. They're ending support for them, and they won't work on the. They won't have any smart features anymore, essentially. Now, I read this. I'm hoping. I still haven't worked out which model of thermostat I've got. I need to look into it. But I'm hoping if I am affected by this, I'd have had an email or something from Google by now. But I just thought I'd let people know, because what this is essentially going to mean is that you won't be able to. You can still use them as thermostats, so they're still going to work. But just they become like any other, just any old thermostat, really. So rather than being able to, you won't be able to use them in the app, you won't be able to use them with your smart speaker, as far as I understand it. You'll only be able to use it via the little thermostat itself, the little display unit, which of course is completely inaccessible. So, it's annoying.
I find with these sorts of things, you don't always get told whether your device will be supported. Even with Apple devices, I actually had to email, contact them and go, is my MacBook supported with the next version of macOS? This was in 2021. And I was told that it will not be, but only when I emailed them was I told this. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been none the wiser until I tried to install the upgrade and it would be, no, not happening.
Yeah. I think the thing that bugs me is, because Google's argument would be, well, you know, we're not taking it away. You can still use it. You just can't use the smart features. That's fine if you're sighted. But if you're not, then you may as well just...
It's interesting because my parents got Nest and they had real problems with it. Not for any sort of accessibility reasons, just because they had problems with it. But that was a consideration when I got Hive, was if they break the app, can I still use the actual device? And I can. It's got three physical buttons on it, plus a temperature dial. Now, don't get me wrong, the app is 10 times easier and I can be more specific with it. But I did know that I would still be able to use it if they broke the app, which at one point they did.
That is interesting. Yeah, that is interesting, to be fair. So obviously I might be looking into a new solution. So I might have a bit more of a look at Hive in that case, just because... This is the risk you take, isn't it, with the smart home stuff? This is the kind of frustrating thing. It's brilliant having all these devices linked up to your smart speaker and really all linked up to an accessible app, and it's really nice and it works really well. It makes it really accessible. But a lot of these devices run, even though you might be, say, asking your smart speaker to turn on the heating or whatever, it's not actually communicating with the device itself. It's communicating with, in this case, Google's servers, and then they pass the message back onto the thermostat. And that's how support for things like this gets pulled, because all it takes is for them to go, right, okay, turning this off. And then that's it. That feature's gone.
Yeah, or the app becomes inaccessible because they've had an update. It's a bit like people that have got Samsung washing machines and, you know, the Samsung Things app, you know, there has been breakages in the past with development of the app, and people have been unable to use their, you know, their washing machines or their tumble dryers or whatever. And then they've had to contact Samsung and say, well, you know, hang on a minute. I'm totally blind. I've got a washing machine and I can't use it anymore because there's not a lot on the machine itself. It's all done through the app. It is a risk you take. It's a bit like the whole thing with Sonos last year when they decided to revamp the app completely. And it just, you know, it just really messed it up for people. And, you know, there was talk about people having to ditch Sonos speakers because, you know, they were no use if the app didn't rectify itself, which it did. But, you know, it's just, that is the risk you take.
Yeah, it is. Well, the times that we're in, unfortunately. I wish I had a solution to the Nest thing. I don't. This was just a bit of a rant from me, to be completely honest. But yeah, if you have got Google Nest, double check which version you've got. Maybe get in contact with Google if you need to. I would go down the Google accessibility support route. You might get a more kind of human answer there. I think that's the way that I'm going to get in touch with them. All right, well, stick with us, guys. It's another Tech Talk.
The popular accessible technology fair Site Village makes its way to Glasgow in May. Here to tell us more about it from organisers Queen Alexandra Charity is Rose Woodall. Rose, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Well, what can we expect from Site Village Glasgow? Who will be there?
Well, Site Village hasn't been to Glasgow since 2017. So now that we're going this year, the response has been fantastic, with exhibitors' tables selling out in 2 weeks and hundreds of tickets already booked. So yeah, I think we're in for a very eventful, busy day, which would be fantastic.
And for people who may have heard about Site Village exhibitions but never been to one before, what are they like?
So it's a really good place to come for hands-on demonstrations, chatting face-to-face. You can ask your questions. You can touch and feel the equipment, or it might be services that's available, and they can give you information to take away with you. So it's really good to sort of be there in person. And then not only do we have like the exhibitors and their stands. We have seminars where you can sit in and find out more information, ask questions. So it's a very interactive experience.
And are there any products or services being displayed this year in Glasgow that you're especially interested in learning more about?
Well, we've got our regulars, some of our regulars that come along. So we've got VisionAid, the technology. So they will be demonstrating that. And you can have, you know, you can touch, feel and talk to them about that. Optilec, again, the same. Retina. And our sponsor, VI Safety, will be talking about safety aspects. So that would be really good to talk to Andrew about how to be safe in the community and at home. So they're our local ones, they're our regular ones. But then we have got local ones to Scotland coming. So we've got Sight Scotland Veteran, Visibility Scotland and Macular Scotland. So it'd be good for us to explore what they've got on offer and, you know, you can have a chat to them as well.
And what do visitors to Sight Village exhibitions tell you that they enjoy most about the day?
Well, they love the atmosphere, and it can be a full day event because there'll be refreshments that they can purchase throughout the days. Like I say, there's the seminars, there's the exhibitors, go and talk to them. So it's a day event, and visitors have said it's a real good buzz. They love the community. They might catch up with friends. Just a really good community feel, and there's always, you know, as we know, technology is forever, you know, getting better and better, and they can see the latest technology or the latest services that's available.
And the Glasgow Science Centre is a wonderful location for events like this. What kind of support will be available on the day for visitors?
Yeah, so we have got volunteers, so I've had some really friendly people get in touch to say that they would love to come and help on the day. So we'll have some guides on the day, and, you know, my team will be there, plus all the exhibitors. So there'll always be someone there to help should anyone need it, really.
And tickets are free to all Sight Village events, but you do recommend booking in advance.
Yeah, because we scan the QR. So if you've already booked in advance, then we can just scan your QR code and you just go straight through. If you haven't booked in advance, then we have to take more details, so it's a little bit longer. And, you know, Sight Village Glasgow is already proving to be extremely busy. So, yeah, if you can book in advance, but if you can't, there's no problem, we can do it on the day.
Well, where can we find out a bit more about tickets and information about Sight Village Glasgow?
So if you go onto our website, which is www.qacsightvillage.org.uk, all the information is on there about Glasgow and our other events in 2025. There's a phone number on there, there's direct email, and there's links to book your tickets. So all the information's on there, but if there's any problems, then by all means, give me a call and I can book tickets or, you know, solve any of the problems that anyone might have.
Well, as you say, this isn't the last Sight Village exhibition of the year, is it? 2025 is a very, very busy year for you. There was Sight Village Wales earlier in the year and Glasgow next, and more to come later on.
Yeah. So Sight Village previous years has done 4 events. This year we're doing the 5 events. So like you say, after Glasgow we'll have Central, then we'll have Blackpool, then we've got a new venue in London, which will be a 2-day event. And then next year we're doing 6 events. It's getting busier and busier.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about those upcoming events later in the year. Sight Village Glasgow will be at the Glasgow Science Centre on Wednesday the 21st of May between 9:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Rose Woodall from QAC, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Okay, thank you very much, and we look forward to welcoming everyone to Glasgow.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time now on Tech Talk to talk Plaid Note Pin. So a few weeks ago, I've mentioned that I've purchased a new interesting recorder called the Plaid Note Pin. And we talked about what it is and why it is quite interesting, but obviously I'll point it out here. So, two selling points with this recorder. One, it is extremely portable. It is absolutely tiny and comes with various attachments in order to make it, well, one, good for discrete recordings, two, good for a wearable recorder. No, before we go to housekeeping rules, I will obviously point out that discrete recordings, as much as they are useful, please do them with the permission of the people that are being recorded. Let's not try to, reenact a Black Mirror episode. That's no good. The other very big selling point to this recorder, and probably the most headlining one, is the AI elements of this recorder. Now, what am I talking about here? Plaud NotePin comes with a companion app called Plaud. Once you open the Plaud app, the recordings will sync from the Plaud NotePin using Bluetooth. The recordings will sync up into the app and you can access them in the app. You can play them and you can then do a few other things. So what is the AI element? You are able to transcribe the voice recordings using the Plaud app. But also there comes the fancy part, because you can then use these transcripts to generate summaries of the recordings. It will use the transcript to then summarize what was said in a much simpler fashion. You can also use it to do mind maps, supposedly. However, that feature isn't actually accessible. Let's take a look at the recorder itself before we take a look at the app. So the recorder itself, it is very small. By very small, I mean it is the size of a very small flash drive or a USB stick. Or if you want to compare it to another object, which in something more of an entertaining fashion, imagine a very giant paracetamol pill. So still small, but bigger than a standard paracetamol would obviously be. On the back of the recorder is a magnetic cover, which can be removed. Its main purpose is to protect the charging ports that are underneath that cover, because the recorder charges in a different way. The recorder then comes with a charging cradle, which is very small. It's a similar size to the recorder itself. It is a little charging pad with a few visible connectors. And the way this charges is you put the cradle on a surface, you remove the magnetic cover from the Plaud NotePin, put the cover down somewhere safely, you don't want to be losing that, and using the magnetic back of the recorder to which the cover attaches, you then attach the recorder to the charging cradle, which I have just done. And whilst it's on the cradle, you then plug the USB cable that is supplied into a charging outlet, whether it's a wall plug or whether it's your PC. And the recorder will then charge using the cradle. And what else comes in the box? A few different attachments for this recorder. So one is a clip with the magnetic part on the back to which you attach the recorder, which you can do like that, and you can then clip the recorder onto a piece of clothing. So that's one handy discreet way of doing things. It also comes with a wristband, so you can actually turn this into a wearable watch of sorts, where it's a rubber sports band with a little compartment to which the recorder is put in, and then you can put it around your wrist like you would a watch and record that way. Another attachment is a lanyard, which you can use to hang the recorder around your neck. Based on the size of this recorder, the quality of the audio recordings, once I've heard them played back, it's actually not the best, which for transcription, you could say it's not a good idea, because for transcription, you want as best quality audio as you can. However, I was pleasantly surprised that despite the lower quality, the transcriptions were fairly accurate to an accuracy level that a transcription can be, I guess. Let's talk about starting a recording. As I said, there's no buttons on this recorder. So the way to start a recording, you need to put your thumb on the top surface of the recorder. This is not the surface that has the magnetic cover on the back. It's the one on the opposite side of the device. And you will feel one vibration to indicate the recording has started. There will also be an indicator light to say it's recording, so it's not fully discreet if someone's looking carefully. Then, if you want to stop recording, you need to put your finger on the surface of the recorder and wait until you hear two vibrations. So this will require a little bit of perseverance, because there is no tactile button or any indicator of sorts as to where you need to put the finger, so it's a kind of a method of trial and error as to starting recording. So it's one of these things where you need to play around with it and get used to where this is. And What I find is putting the recorder into my hand and then putting my entire thumb on the device and sort of moving it around, eventually I will hear the vibration. It's probably the best way of doing it. If you really can't get used to it, the good thing is you do have 30 days to return the product if you really don't get on with it. Let's look at the Plaud app, because that one is quite interesting. So, as I mentioned, the recorder works with a standalone app called Plaud, and this is where you sync your recordings and all the AI fancy stuff happens. I will show you the accessibility of it. Now, would I say it's accessible? Technically, yes, but you can sometimes get into the debate of usable versus accessible and the comparisons between these two states. So let's just show you it.
Plaud, Plaud Note Pin.
So, there's two ways you can use this app. One, you can use it with screen recognition enabled. Two, you can use it without. Or actually, there's a third one. You can use it with switching between screen recognition on and off, because I think it can help in certain areas of the app. Let me show you what you've got without screen recognition.
Plaud Note Pin.
So that's the recorder.
Image. Image. Possibly. Search. Image. Image. All files.
So as you can already see, there's a few image elements, and some of them will say possibly search, so you can figure out what it is, but not always. So that's already one thing to keep in mind.
Six.
So all files, six files.
04, 17 call, guide dog medication order, 2025, 04, 17, 14 hours, 17 minutes, and 12 seconds, 1 minute 56 is, note pin.
So that's a little test recording I did to see how well it would pick up if I did a phone call. To order medication for young Caesar the guide dog. To be fair, it was one of these recordings where I was more curious how well it would transcribe it. Bearing in mind, it wasn't the easiest audio-wise. So that's what you have there. You've got a list of recordings. Let me tell you what we've got along the bottom.
Files, image, possible text, files. Me, image, possible text, Z0%.
So the labelling in this app has got a lot to be desired, but it does work. It's one of these things where I think you have to be a bit patient with it. It's not a completely inaccessible app. Neither is it as accessible as it can be. But the developers I've been hearing are aware of it and are willing to make accessibility improvements to the app. So we just have to wait and see what happens. So that is a brief walkthrough of what the Plaud recorder is. When it comes to the summaries part, again, as I said, you need to be mindful of the fact that they are done by AI. I have to say, I was quite impressed. So despite the lower sounding audio quality, it does pick up quite a lot of decent things. The other thing is, you have quite a large choice of templates for various recordings. So whether they are calls or meetings or presentations, you can choose the relevant template, which is quite handy because then it generates different summaries based on which template you select. So sometimes you might play around with different templates if you don't fully get the information that you like. And you can also ask AI questions based on the summary you get. So that can be quite handy. Other things to note, there is a paid subscription plan, but it's not mandatory. The free plan offers you 300 minutes a month or that it can transcribe. So that's, to me, that's quite a lot. It all depends on how many recordings and sessions you'd use this for and whether the plan will be worth it. But for me, based on how little I use it, the plan or the free plan is certainly more than enough. Which is quite handy for me, but you can give the plans a try if you end up liking this and using it more. There are other recorders from Plaud. There's the Plaud Note, which is a bigger recorder, which is still quite small, still the size of a credit card, I've heard, but it is considerably bigger. And the Plaud Note, I believe, also has some buttons as well, which could be quite handy because this recorder, as I said, one of the biggest drawbacks of it is the fact that it has no physical buttons, so you need to sort of play a bit of a guessing game as to when it's recording and when it isn't. Not impossible, but certainly not the easiest. So if buttons is what you like and you still like the other features of the Plaud recorders, i.e. the AI features, then the Plaud Note might be more up your street. Or you may have other solutions. Do let us know if you like the sound of a separate recording device that has AI capabilities, or do you just think it's easier to do in other ways? What ways do you make notes during physical presentations or meetings? Do you use these devices, Or do you use an app on your phone? Or do you go the old school way too, which sometimes can't be beat, really? But yes, that is a little walkthrough of the Plaud Note Pin Recorder here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Let's catch up with some of your messages and emails then. A lot of talk about these Meta Ray-Ban glasses, which I'm sure won't be a surprise to anyone. Molly is first up with a voice message with a couple of tips for us.
Hello everyone at Tech Talk. So I just wanted to send a quick voice message to say that I've got the Meta glasses and the look and see, and it's blimmin' amazing. Absolutely brilliant. I've found if you want to read a print letter, sometimes print letters can be a bit small, so you have to fiddle about with the adjusting. But once you get in focus, saying, hey, Meta, read this letter from top to bottom, word for word, works really, really well.
Thanks, Molly. Some good tips there. We definitely seem to be onto something with this whole read from top to bottom thing. I haven't tried it yet. I keep meaning to. But that definitely seems to be, that's coming through quite a lot. So we seem to be definitely onto a winner with that one. I've got an email from Kevin next, who says, I have a Smart Vision 3 phone, which I love, as it's the only smartphone that I've been able to fully use. I also have the Meta Ray-Bans and the Meta AI app installed on the Smart Vision. The app works well. However, when you ask a question, the voice is very stuttery and distorted. He says, I've asked a friend to try it out on their standard Android phone and the glasses work well, so I know the glasses are working okay. So it seems to be some kind of conflict between the Meta glasses and the Smart Vision. Have any of your listeners had a similar problem? And is there a solution to this? Now, I'm not certain. I think, Jackie, I think you said you've got some thoughts on this one.
I'm wondering if, first of all, and I could be completely wrong about this, but I am wondering if, because the operating system on the Smart Vision 3 is behind, I'm wondering if that has got anything to do with it. I think the Smart Vision 3 is on Android maybe 12. We're coming up to Android 16, and the MetaView app is being updated all the time. So I'm really wondering, to be honest, if the phone is struggling to cope with the new and updated app. Now, as I say, I could be wrong about that, but I suspect it might have something to do with it. Plus, the technology in the smartphone is probably older than what you would get on, say, a Google Pixel 9 if you went out and bought one. These things, when they're specialist, they are always behind the curve. And I really wonder if that has something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I had a similar thought. I mean, I know it's not the... I didn't know which version of Android it was running, but I know it's not the most powerful phone in the world, specifications-wise. So that could have something to do with it. The other thought that I had, and again, this is just a complete guess, but I'm wondering if... Because the Smart Vision was designed for us, so it was designed to be used with speech, I'm sort of wondering if it's keeping the connection open to the glasses. Because, you know, you've got some of these Bluetooth earpieces that you can get. A lot of them nowadays will, if there's no audio, they will kind of go to sleep or go into like a standby mode. And that's why sometimes if you use a Bluetooth headset or something with your screen reader, if it's been quiet for a minute or so, you might get that, when it starts talking again, you might get the first couple of seconds are cut off. And that's why usually they've gone into some sort of power saving mode. I'm wondering if the Smart Vision is keeping the connection open to prevent that happening, but then that's conflicting with the voice from the glasses. Again, I don't know, but if there's a way to maybe turn off the speech or to route the phone's audio somewhere else, but still keep the glasses connected, you'd still want them connected because they would need an internet connection to answer your question. But if that's possible, and I don't know if it is, maybe that would be worth a try as well. Other than that, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I think we'll just have to, as you said, throw it out there to you. If you've had this problem or if you've got any suggestions, then let us know. Kelly has also been in touch about the Meta Ray-Bans. She says she's updated hers and points out that although Meta AI is good for telling you what it can see, it's not quite perfect at reading printed text or cooking directions, which yeah, we've heard quite a few times. She also says, with Be My Eyes, it's not quite perfect. And she says, I sometimes struggle to get a response depending on where I am. Yeah, again, it is a little bit fragile. Kind of depends on your internet connection. But yeah, good points, Kelly, and thanks for getting in touch. Final email today from Paul, who says, hello, team. I have a TV-onics receiver and recorder that I bought from R&IB many years ago. I used to love that, the TV-onics Freeview box. That was brilliant. Anyway, Paul says, I find that Freeview Channel 730, R&IB Connect Radio, if you're wondering, rarely works and often displays no signal, whereas all global and BBC stations seem to work fine. Is there a reason for this, and can it be resolved? It means that I have to use my phone or listen on the website and cannot record the show. Now, my immediate thought was to try retuning it, but I don't know if that would cause further issues with the device being so old. My other thought is Tyra Technology.
Yeah, they seem to have bought anything secondhand of the TV-onics family, and they are really good at repairing them. They will sell you another one secondhand. They will put a hard drive in for you, but they may have some solutions for tuning issues. I have heard about this 730 channel not recording. It's been difficult in the past to get as well, which I don't know the reason. I don't know that Freeview was a massive success in many ways anyway. It's certainly a bit weaker in some areas than it should be. But it's certainly worth asking Moby Nikbal at Tyra Technology if he has got any solutions, because they seem to be the go-to people for the TV-onics now. They're no longer available.
Yeah, good shout. I would contact Tyra Technology. Their website, if you want to get in contact with them, is tyratech.com. So that's TairaTech.com.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
It's time to talk gaming once again here on Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio, and to chat a few recent bits of gaming and about game accessibility in general. And to get the expert onto the field, well, it's our very own accessible gaming officer, Mr. Sightless Combat, is back. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. With an introduction like that, I'm doing even better. That's very kind of you. But yeah, good to be back. As always, the ever fast moving games industry, churning out news and updates like no tomorrow.
There's always something happening every minute, and it's kind of hard to keep up with all this, but we'll do our best. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is Game Accessibility Conference. I've not heard of this event until it took place this year. Curious to hear, what actually is this event and what is usual purpose?
Yeah, so the Game Accessibility Conference, or GAConf as it's shortened down to, has been going for many, many years now. And it's essentially to gather industry, you know, players, anybody who's interested in learning about accessibility in gaming together to discuss, you know, new innovations, updates, you know, research, developments, all those kinds of things, and to get networking done as well. Famously, The Last of Us Part II's accessibility essentially occurred thanks to an encounter at GAConf. In the US, they do a US and an EU edition, but the whole story of Last of Us accessibility kind of started at the Game Accessibility Conference, really, in terms of the interactions that happened that led to it. But yeah, they've you know, I've spoken at the Game Accessibility Conference before. I've spoken multiple times in various places on a variety of subjects. One of which was audio description several years ago, which actually led to audio description in gaming kind of being considered by Descriptive Video Works, or so the story I've been told by the wonderful head of Descriptive Video Works. He actually told me that story at the RNIB symposium a few years ago, which was amazing to hear that, you know, those presentations are being utilized for, you know, they're being shared that widely. That's fantastic to hear. So the the research and the discussions that happen at GAConf are not just for, you know, that those couple of days in, you know, in online or in person. It's not just for those couple of days. It's, you know, every day of the year you could be sharing those presentations around and being like, these are useful pieces of information to have. So yeah, it's a great conference. I'd encourage anybody to go. As I say, it's online or in person, so you can do either one. You can network in either sort of version of it as well. So yeah, an amazing event to go to.
Let's get a bit of an update as to what happened at this year's conference. What were the themes? You know, was it more? Were there more developments for gamers without sight, or was it more for gamers with partial sight? Any particular highlights that stood out for you?
I'd say this year it was more for gamers with partial sight, though there were discussions of sort of audio and music games and interesting things like that as well, that could of course lead to future developments too. But there was a colorblindness tool announced called Chroma, which is kind of designed for anyone who wants to test things with colorblindness, which was quite an interesting presentation to sit and watch. There was a whole sort of piece on fonts and things as well at one point, which was quite fascinating, even though I don't use fonts myself, not being able to read print. But it's interesting to know about, you know, pixels and sizes of, you know, words and text and things, because that text size comes up in conversations. I know the Wobbly Gamer will be very interested at the prospect of talking about text size until, you know, until the end of time in terms of accessibility. But yeah, there was that to mention as well. But also Atomfall. Atomfall had a breakdown too in terms of the accessibility, the game from Rebellion, of course. I actually consulted on that, and I'm in the credits for it as well, as is Wobbles. He's also in the credits. And, you know, as a consultant. And the interesting thing about it was, you know, hearing how that process happens. That game is not unfortunately playable without assistance, but there is a lot in there to like, even including a few innovations as well, like NPC sounds that mean you can tell friend from foe quite a distance away, even if you can't see them. So as much as there's nothing playable that I could necessarily recall for gamers without sight like myself, the fact of the matter is things are happening, whether, you know, publicly or behind the scenes, that could make future games playable, even if current ones aren't. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, in general, there was a lot to like, but mostly it was in terms of, you know, partial sight that we saw sort of the most discussion, I would say, realistically.
So let's talk about gaming accessibility in general at the moment. You know, we've not talked gaming for a few months. What's the current kind of state of gaming accessibility when it comes to mainstream games and availability?
I think there's still a sense of, you know, we want more games is what I'm seeing from, you know, the community generally, which I can totally understand. But the fact of the matter is progress is slow. But progress is also progress. So you've got studios who weren't doing things before, for whatever reason, who are now doing things. Or, you know, there are remasters that are coming out with better accessibility than the original. Case in point, Days Gone Remastered, which I did receive a free review code for, that doesn't have accessibility to be played without assistance. But the original game, you know, didn't, to my knowledge, have any kind of accessibility in terms of menu narration, which this remaster does. So it's great to be able to say, oh, this has menu narration now. So, you know, if you were having trouble reading the menus before, you know, that can be worked around with this new implementation, for instance. Then equally, you have stuff like South of Midnight. You know, that game has the potential to be fully playable if the developers, you know, and the team behind it are allowed to update it, and they can update it to support the extra features that are going to be needed to make that possible. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is that game does have nav assist, that game does have menu narration, and they are good enough that with a few extra tweaks, adjustments and additions, it could be fully playable, I reckon, from what I've seen already. So as much as we're not seeing, you know, a ton of releases that have full accessibility, there are releases that either could be updated to have it if, you know, if the resources, if the budget, if everything works out for that. But there are also, you know, potentially releases coming later in the year, things like Bits and Bops, Rhythm Quest, maybe Rhythm Doctor as well. So lots of rhythm games, but that doesn't mean that other releases won't appear too, you know, that are going to be hopefully fully accessible. So yeah, we live in hope. You know, we stand in an interesting place of progress is being made, not as fast as people would like, but progress is progress, and we are seeing things happen and, you know, paving the way for the future. I think that's the way you always have to look at it, as much as it's frustrating to be like, I haven't got any games to play now that aren't sort of new and the same as everybody else's. Fact of the matter is, there might be games in future that will work with stuff that's already happening now.
Are there any developments in accessible gaming that gamers without sight can look forward to in the near future?
Those rhythm games I mentioned, you know, Bits and Bops, Rhythm Quest, Rhythm Doctor, those three are ones to look out for, partly because, you know, they've said they'll be hopefully releasing this year in some capacity, as far as I'm aware. Those will be very interesting and doubtless challenging in varying degrees, I don't doubt. But other than that, you know, there are games that I'm interested to see what they do. Even, it, you know, because as much as playing with sighted assistance isn't ideal, sometimes that's a thing you have to look at, because, you know, there aren't enough games that can be played without assistance. You know, so stuff like Doom the Dark Ages, I'm looking forward to playing that with Copilot, you know, maybe on stream showing it off as well. And then you've got things like Gears E-Day, which I don't know when that's coming out, but that could be very interesting given Gears 5's previous track record for accessibility. We could have an even more accessible shooter experience. And then, of course, we've got stuff like Diablo 4, where we are still awaiting the arrival of navigation assist in dungeons. I really hope the team are able to put all the time and effort they need to into that, because I will certainly be playing that a lot once that feature arrives and hopefully works as well as they want it to. So there's not anything sort of immediate where I can say, oh, this is releasing then, that has accessibility. But there's a few games to keep an eye out for, and I'm sure there's other ones as well that you could have a look at to sort of bide your time. Things like Land of Livia, where that's a mobile game. So if you want a game to sort of sink your time into and click every few hours when the quests pop back up, that kind of thing. There's definitely stuff happening. It's just a matter of hanging around and seeing when it's happening, which is not ideal, but sometimes that's the way gaming works. Game dev takes time.
Before we finish up, I want to ask you about this thing I've seen, and the name itself intrigued me. PlayStation the Concert?
Yes. Yeah, PlayStation the Concert. I actually went to see it very recently at Wembley. It was very, very good. Essentially, music from various PlayStation franchises. So God of War, Horizon, The Last of Us, Ghost of Tsushima, Journey, Bloodborne, Spider-Man as well, to name just you know, just a number of those, played by a live orchestra with on-screen visuals. And as much as the on-screen visuals weren't described, that would be an amazing addition to see. You know, that's not why you're there. The music is why you're there. And it was absolutely brilliant in terms of an experience. It was great to go and see this music played live, you know, in person, particularly for franchises that I've actually had the good fortune to work on. So God of War and Horizon are franchises that I really enjoy. And seeing that music played live by a very talented group of musicians was fantastic. What I will say is, if you decide to go to a gig like this, do wear earplugs. From the very first drum hit, I realized this was going to be way too loud to have blasted into my ears for a good, you know, couple of hours. So I thankfully had earplugs on me, but it is a phenomenal thing. If you ever get to see live music, whether it's video games, whether it's films, I went to see Star Wars Return of the Jedi live in concert, for instance, and that was phenomenal, with the film being projected and you know, the audio played into the venue, as well as the orchestra. So if you get the chance to go and see live music like that, I would highly recommend it. And PlayStation the Concert is, you know, certainly on that list of things you need to go and see if you get the chance in terms of video games.
That sounds quite interesting. I didn't know that something like this existed, but it sounds really quite fascinating, because music in games is often fantastic. So it's good to actually know there are concerts that do this sort of thing. Now, if people want to keep up with accessible gaming news, where can they go to do that?
I mean, I will sometimes disseminate news on my own channels. So you can find me on various socials as Sightless Combat, SIGHTLESSKOMBAT, where I also, you know, stream and put videos out as well. So if you want to ever ask questions firsthand, then you can feel free to come along and do that as well while we're playing the games in question, for instance. But also, of course, you can email the gaming inbox, gaming@rnib.org.uk, should you have any questions you want to throw that way as well.
Fantastic. We will look forward to having you back on when there are more gaming news around, and I'm sure there will be because it's an ever-expanding area. But for now, Sightless Combat Accessible Gaming Officer at the RNIB, thank you very much for joining us here to talk gaming on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's all we've got time for this week. As always, if you want to get in touch, if you've got any comments, feedback, questions, please do get in touch with us. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send an email or you can attach a voice message. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Natalie Curran and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.